We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 295 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and joining me today, all the way from Barca TV Plus, well, that's actually digital, I should be more specific, all the way from Barcelona, is Jamie Coles. Jamie, thanks for joining the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, so we are putting the disclaimer up top that, yeah, everybody knows that I do some of the Twitch stuff for Barca, but Jamie is very much in the weeds of Barca TV Plus working for the club. So I know people are very critical when my guests don't heap the negativity on FC Barcelona the way they feel like they should. So we're putting the disclaimer up top that Jamie does work for Barca TV Plus, and we want to keep Jamie in his job. So we are going to talk about some positive stuff. We're going to talk about personalities of players. We hope to give you information here about players or things that you might not know behind the scenes of how that all works. And then we're definitely going to talk about the feminine, which is not going to put Jamie's job in jeopardy, because that's a lot of positive stuff there. So that's the second half of the show today. So Jamie, let's start today talking again. He's going to help me out all things FC Barcelona, but it is the international break. So we are going to do a few things off the pitch first. And I said, on to the field, on to the first team for a little bit there, then on to the Barca feminine. So Jamie, you ready?
Yeah, let's give it a go.
All right, so one of the highlights from you that I saw last year, again, correction for people, you're working on both as an on-air talent and behind the scenes a bit too with Barca TV Plus, you're doing commentary, you're doing some of the specialty shows, and I think the highlight for me watching your highlight package from all the work you've done in your time with Barca for the last year was that cooking show with, American bias, here comes, everybody knows it's coming, Serginho Dest and Conrad de la Fuente, unfortunately, Conrad is now at Marseille, but that cooking show that they did, and I think a lot of Kool-Aids obviously assume we know who these players are inside and out off the field, or we know exactly or characterize what Serginho Dest is based on reputation or the way his mannerisms on the field. But what is Dest like in that kind of environment where it is kind of laid back? And I mean, is he really that eccentric, wearing the basketball jersey to Messi's press conference? Just is that Serginho Dest meeting him behind the scenes too?
Yeah, I mean, we had like an hour with him in our kitchen TV set, and he was really, really nice. Like, he was super chilled. Yeah, he's got his eccentricities. I think, we saw that side of him, like you say, at Messi's press conference. I remember seeing the photos of that afterwards. I was like, what is Serginho Dest wearing? But that's great. I love a bit of personality and character. And he came on, he was on the very first episode, like the pilot of that TV show. We didn't really know how it was all going to work with the players. We'd rehearsed plenty of times in advance. And he really got into it. He just threw himself 100% into it. He was like, I'm going to give this my all. He was there to win. Like, he was like, super competitive about it with Conrad as well. I think those two got on really well. So that definitely helped. And yeah, he's just like everything that we kind of asked, he wanted to have a go at, up to the point where at the end, the hour kind of finished that we had with the players to film everything. And he was like, no, I'm going to stay. I want to stay here and chill out with you guys. And like, he was eating the meatballs and spaghetti that we made, and like, yeah, he was really, really cool, really chilled and just like happy to have a good time, and film some TV.
So was he, the cooking show continue on, were they easier than the basketball players, or was that more difficult?
No, and Brandon Davis and Victor Clave, the basketball players, they were great. They were really, really fun. And I think because we'd got into it, there was a second episode, we kind of knew a little bit more what to expect as well and what we could try and do, and our director, he's a he pushes me to my limits. He was like, Jamie, we're going to drink. You know, I'm only like 5'5" at a push. He's like, we're going to put you next to these basketball players. We're going to dress you up as a basketball player. We're going to try and get you played one-on-one with Brandon Davis. And we did it all. And they were real good sports about it. And I think they had a lot of fun as well. So it was two very different sides and different filming. But I think that happens, you know, you're on a TV set. There's no music or anything. So when you're kind of filming it, everything's a bit weird anyway. Everything's very like unnatural almost, you know, it's kind of different in that way. But to have those there and to have them really get into it and like really buy into this, like at the end of the day, it's kind of a nonsense thing that we're doing, like getting these footballers like to come and cook. And for me, that's awesome because it's, yeah, my dream was always to work on a cooking show. I didn't think it would happen at Barcelona TV Plus. So when they said like, hey, Jamie, we want you to work on this, like it was a dream come true. And I think it's cool for the players because they're not doing the usual kind of sit down, talk about the season, talk about the objectives for the season, how they see other players. You know, they were in this different world that they're not used to. And we got to ask some questions. Like I got to ask Comrade if he's ever eaten alligator or... Yeah. We talked to Serginio Dest about like what music he listens to when he cooks and stuff. So there's a different way of interacting with the players as well. So that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this weird balance, especially like creating content for Barca TV Plus, where with results not going the club's way and you know, whether it's two matches in a row or three matches in a row, when things are just kind of sour on the internet or outside of the club or the people who are going to be engaging your content, I know it can be challenging where, you know, these players, especially as people too, they're paid a lot of money to win games. And when they don't necessarily win games or get the results that fans want, things can seem sour. And it seems like that is myopically the only thing that's going on in everybody's life at all times. And of course, that's their job. Their job is to win football games, not to win cooking shows with you guys too. But again, I understand the challenge of, you know, people expect that these players are going to completely be, I mean, their personalities are going to represent everything that they are on the field at all times. And so I would say, like, again, the challenges of creating that content, but I know you haven't met all the players. What have you gotten from either Georgina or Mai or some of those at Barca TV Plus or Diego, who's been on the show before, who've met some of the players? And how do you guys create content and figure out the content based on even what kind of breaking those perceptions that Dembele is just some kind of, you know, basically just this immature kid who does nothing but play video games, so he gets injured all the time, and Pooj is nothing but happy all the time, 100% of the time, always smiling. That's all that he is. And then PK is kind of, you know,
Ricky Pooj is always like super positive, man. There's a lot of pre-planning goes into everything we do. You know, we never just turn up with a camera and start shooting and start asking them questions, or, you know, Georgina never just sort of happens to sit down with them and do the 90-second challenge or whatever it is she's doing. So all of these players, we kind of, there's a lot of preparation, a lot of research goes into it. You know, we spend a lot of time trawling their Instagram or their Twitter or to find out kind of what they like and what they're doing and what we could ask them that could maybe provoke a bit of a response that shows that side of them that maybe fans don't see in a 90-minute match plus the 30 seconds that they speak to the press after the match. And so I think for us on Barca TV Plus, and I know you asked about players, and we'll talk about some in a minute if you like. But I think for us, and you said, you know, you talked about making content. I think that's kind of our challenge, is to kind of give a more fuller picture of these players that fans maybe won't get access to otherwise. And so that's why, like, inviting them into the kitchen, or I don't know if you've seen Made in La Masia with Ricky Pooj.
Oh, of course,
it's a really cool documentary, yep. and. Being able to kind of film different things and then sit him down and show him them and talk them, you know, get his reactions to them, I think it gives a really great insight to what these players are like as people, which for me, like, that's everything, you know, the people stories, the people connection, the result on the pitch obviously is important, but for me as a storyteller, as a you know, content creator, a TV content creator, it's these human connections and these human stories.
Yeah, I mean, before we get into more players, especially on the Pooj point, that, you know, while watching that, it is this reminder that even if Ricky Pooj, because he, you know, at 21 now, if he, or 22, if he can't get on the field and he can't become a first team regular at FC Barcelona like he wants to, it's just, you know, we take, as fans, we take our emotion out of it. And we say, you know, hey, you know, for the best thing for his career, for the business decision, he needs to move on or he needs to go elsewhere. And then you watch that kind of documentary and reminded that no, Pooj wants to succeed at FC Barcelona. That's what he wants to do. That's the thing he's always wanted to do. That's why he's been here for years. That's why when he started his career at Jakob Teresa, which is the same place that Sergio Busquets got his get start. And even from there, when he first got the chance to come to, I think it was at the cadet A level with Barcelona, and then he changes his position and he does all these different things so that he can try to succeed. He does what he's told at La Masia so that he can potentially succeed someday. And now it's at that point of his, a critical part of his career where he's either being patient and potentially going to swim, or he's going to wait too long and potentially sink. And those hard business decisions are going to have to be made for Pooj. But yeah, at the end of the day, he's just this 21-year-old kid or 22-year-old kid who's just trying to enjoy his time at FC Barcelona, which is a place that he's been for a long time. And it's his home. And I think as fans, we do remember that. And to your point about the negativity, you know, jumping back and forth, I mean, I struggle with myself where on the YouTube channel, I'm coming out with a thing about all the backstories of all the young, the dream teen, as Rafisa Barça had it, and, you know, how they got to Barcelona and how Barcelona built this group of players. But I know that video, just speaking again behind the scenes, you know, lifting up the hood here with this conversation with you, that thinking about the content itself, I know that if I created something much more inflammatory about the Laporta latest press conference and Messi, and if I made it negative, I know that people will care and people will respond to it, and you're going to get feedback and you're going to get, you know, a lot of views. But I know that thing that, by characterizing them as people or going through the history of the club, people just don't care as much. And that's a tough balance, right? That negativity is the thing that's going to get the clicks and engagement, but it's not really substantial content that you and I as content creators want to pour our heart into, because it's just negativity all the time.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of what I'm doing at the club, I'm well aware of the situation, the state of the internet, where
yeah,
anger sells. And it's that simple, sadly, you know. And that's why I think we're finding such like divisive press at the minute. And I don't want to go on too much of a rant about this because I could go on for hours. But I think everything's either black or white these days. And that's just not the case in reality, in human lives. But sadly, that doesn't sell or newspapers or TV shows or get you the clicks on your website or your YouTube channel. But I'm completely with you. I think it's far more, not necessarily difficult, but there's more to putting together something meaningful and something with a human connection and something that allows people to maybe shine regardless of everything else than it is to put out something that like you say, just some clickbait or,
yeah,
you know, something inflammatory. So yeah, I and that's a, for us at Barca TV, like that's a nice challenge, you know. That's we want to sit down and tell their stories, and like you say, whether it's with Georgina on the YouTube or Sarah on the YouTube channel, or even like commentating a match, and you know, you've called matches and sports events and stuff, being able to sort of editorialize a little bit and talk about other things that aren't necessarily directly on the pitch that may have some kind of influence or impact or a bit of story. Like, I think that's a nice thing to have. And I think it gives people a reason to emotionally invest in these people, these players or these athletes or whatever. And like for me, I think, like I said it before, that's the most important thing, is these human connections and these human stories. So yeah, I agree with you. I think it would be so easy to do so. And just going to what you sort of said about how people take to Twitter and they say, hey, like Ricky Pudge isn't getting as many first team minutes as he deserves or whatever. You have to remember that these kids grew up in La Masia. They've made a lot of sacrifices for FC Barcelona. They love FC Barcelona. It's their home. Their best friends probably play and work there as well. You know, it's not as easy as just saying, ah, yeah, I'll just uplift everything and go somewhere else. And their dream is to play for Barca, whether it's Ricky Pudge or someone else. So I don't think it's the same old thing with social media, isn't it? It's so easy to come out with something and Messi should have agreed to play for free, or he should have gone to, I don't know, some third division club and agreed to play for free there. Or, you know, there was all sorts of things that came out when he left.
Yeah.
But that's so easy to say, you know, the reality is often a very different story.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, I mean, the second half of our show is all about the feminine, but you and I had spoken again, just, I feel like I'm being way too honest on this podcast, but even for me, just knowing that if I just made it all about the feminine today, that I think, you know, people would not necessarily be as interested, because the feminine doesn't have the same following, obviously, that the men's team does, which has been around since 1899, where the feminine team has only been around really in its current form for about 15 years-ish, give or take, depending, like with actual investment for about 10 years, you know, financial investment, as I've talked about in the show before. So, yeah, I mean, from day to day, well, as we know,
there was that there was that campaign, wasn't there, recently when we launched the new second team strip, the purple strip.
Yeah.
And they did a kind of big launch with the women's team. And they were saying that, you know, those players that laid the groundwork for us to be able to have a women's team now, some of them weren't even ever allowed to play because it was like outlawed for women to play football in the whatever year it was.
1970.
It was, and 1970 is not that long ago, really.
Right. It's,
you know.
Yeah, right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, and to that end, with everything going well with the feminine, it's a reminder, too, that Football Club Barcelona, yes, football is in the name, but there's, as you talked about with the basketball program and all the other clubs, if you will, or all the other different sports that global international fans don't care about, because they not only do they not have access to it, but it's also, if I'm going to watch, I mean, I'm in the U.S., so if I'm going to watch basketball, you know, I try to watch the baloncesto when I can, but by and large, the NBA, just the level here, I'm going to watch the NBA. That's the true thing. It's in my back door. But for the feminine, we're going to get, again, I don't want to get fully into the feminine, but they are a premium of what women's football is representing at the moment. However, working for the club, how much would you say from day to day of your time and everyone's attention is going towards the men's team? And to that end, you know, as serious days that happen when the men's team, you know, lose to Bayern Munich 3-0, and it seems like there's a cloud around the whole club. I mean, there's a dark cloud around the whole club. But because the club is made up of so many different sports and so many different people, and it's right that on the same day that the men's team might lose, the women might win 8-1 or 9-1. So, I mean, what is it from day to day, and how much of everyone's attention is just involved in the result and what happened with the men's first team?
To be very blunt, I think that more people probably come to Barca TV Plus for the men's team. You know,
blunt about that. I mean, that's a truth. I mean, it's
yeah.
The men's team exists. They built this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm trying to think of the best way to phrase it now. So yeah, people come to Barca TV Plus primarily, I'd imagine, most of them for the men's team. And so as a result, we have to prioritize the men's team. That's probably it's the primary business of the club. And as a result, it's the primary business of Barca TV Plus as well. But the reality is that we try and give as much to each different section as the audience demands, sort of thing.
It's, of course,
you know, we very much try and meet audience needs as best we can. And there are people that have got much more complicated jobs than me that do the data analytics, and we run polls and questionnaires, and we try and make sure that everything's kind of as best tailored to the fans as it possibly can be, because that's the whole point at the end of the day, you know. And in terms of results, I think for us, certainly for me, like my number one priority is to make cool content, to make cool TV, to, you know, create stuff that these fans are going to enjoy watching. We can't avoid the fact that a 3-0 defeat to Bayern Munich isn't what we want, obviously. But at the same time, we kind of need to stay positive and almost like move on, not as quickly as possible, but fairly promptly, to look forward to the next thing that's going to happen. And yeah, okay, that can get challenging to keep that positive spin, or it can get challenging to go and do a cooking show when, you know, the players aren't necessarily getting the results they want. But I think it's important to celebrate the victories where there are victories. And so whether that's, I don't know, in basketball or women's football or wherever, it's just as important to celebrate those as the men's team, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
and there's plenty to celebrate, you know. The women's team, like, there aren't enough superlatives to describe how their season's going and the past season as well. And there's a lot to celebrate with, like, Gabby, Pedri, you know, in the national teams, as well as making their debuts and putting in really great performances for such, you know, young guys in the Barca first team, you know, on such a big stage like the Camp Nou. So there's plenty to celebrate there, and it's not always just the results.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of Pedri, you know, we're detouring a little bit from the first team and getting outside of the city itself. But what do you think of Pedri being named as a Ballon d'Or finalist or the Golden Ball finalist instead of, say, Frankie de Jong or even Memphis being named to the list at all? I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I mean, we've said the individual awards. I mean, Messi's won it more than anyone else, yet he said many, many times, you know, this doesn't really matter. Team trophies are the thing that define careers. But I think at the end of the day, Messi will probably win it again, or should at least win it again this year. And the other nominations don't matter. But yeah, I mean, it's I don't know. Pedri, as the one sole representative for the current squad of FC Barcelona for the Ballon d'Or, it's interesting. I think it made the proper headline it should have, because, you know, feeling like Frankie or even Memphis for his time at Lyon and for the Netherlands feels like a bit of an omission, those two.
Yeah, and I have seen loads of tweets and headlines and stuff saying that other players have been overlooked as well. And I think for me, like, Pedri to have burst onto the scene as he has done and play, you know, I mean, I did his, when they signed the contract, we did like a live show, and I did like the running commentary and the translation of his press conference and stuff. And nobody knew who he was. Like, nobody. He was a complete unknown. And he came as this young hopeful to FC Barcelona, and he very quickly joined the starting 11, and deservedly. And he put in some amazing, amazing performances with Barca. And then he put in some amazing performances with Spain. And then he put in some amazing performances in the Olympics. So I think to have kind of like arrived and to have risen so drastically, that needs to be recognized some way or another. A Ballon d'Or? I don't know. Maybe. Like, I don't know. But I think it's great that he's included alongside these big names, because I think it's deserved. I think it's not every day that a player just appears and leaves such a huge mark on the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I think they sell the Ballon d'Or as well, too. They wanted to make sure that they gave, again, Barcelona didn't wind up winning any trophies. So in a year where Barcelona doesn't win major trophies, it's difficult to put too many players from one squad in the same place. So we really can think of this list as Messi, who was Barcelona's best player, you know, for 15 years, and Pedri were the two representatives for Barcelona. So, like, for me, yeah, I thought Memphis at Lyon and Netherlands was better than Neymar was last year, and that would be one of my changes. And that, yeah. What I always say about these lists is that whenever you argue about who's a snub, I always say you have to make sure that you rise to the occasion and you take somebody off. So I would say that I would take Neymar off for Memphis, and I would have taken, if I'm going to have to add Frankie for what he did with the Netherlands, I would take off Simon Kjær, or Kjær, however you pronounce that, who was, I believe, playing, was it Italy? I think he's playing for Milan. So that would be the name that I'd take off. But also, I understand how they wanted to, you know, give some credit to one of the players on Milan. Totally get it. But Now, speaking of Ballon d'Or, let's transition to the feminine. Alexi Putellas, Sandra Paños, Lecky Martins, Irene Paredes, and Jenny Hermoso all named to the shortlist for the Ballon d'Or. But it was funny, for as good as the feminine have been, I looked at the list and I wondered where Aitana Bonmati and Caroline Graham Hansen were. And usually I'm not somebody who gets into the inflammatory stuff, but I thought they were omissions. No matter what you say, I mean, there are other players on the list that I would have taken off for those two. And I mean, it's crazy that one team would get, what was it, 7 players, but really Irene was getting that nomination for her work with PSG last year, where they were their best ever. So really it's just 6 players that are getting that kind of recognition. But I mean, yeah, I wondered where Caroline and Aitana were.
Along with a lot of other people, I think. Yeah. But then I don't know, how would it have looked to have 7 Barca players nominated, shortlisted? I don't know. I agree. I think potentially they could have nominated a dozen Barca players. You know, they had such a... I struggled to find words, you know, for what their season was last year, because it was just outstanding. It, you know, they lost, what, 2 matches or something? In they lost to Atletico Madrid, who they beat last weekend. And they, off the top of my head, I can't remember
now. I think they lost the Spanish Super Cup, and then didn't they lose to Valencia at the end of the season? Or was it Valencia? It was somebody.
Yeah, they had like
the end of the season in league.
Rocky end to the season, a rocky end
Rocky end. We put that team. Listeners, we're putting quotes on.
But yeah, they just had such this like amazing run. Like, it's hard to kind of distinguish, and they're such a great team. Like they meld together as a team as well. You know, so it's really hard to kind of pull out just one name that stood out among the rest. Obviously Alexia got the Pichichi, and that counts a lot, but like they all just work together so much.
Yeah,
you mentioned Caroline. Like, Caroline is the architect for so many goals in that team, as well as scoring herself and just absolutely dominating that wing when she gets hold of the ball. I it wouldn't have surprised me if she were there. Maybe I'm a bit more surprised that she's not there, but I don't know. You have to draw a line, I guess.
Yeah.
And then Aitana Bonmati is just like, her work ethic is incomparable. She recovers so many balls and sets up so many plays from the midfield. She's another that I think would have fit in perfectly on the shortlist.
Well, I'm going to do the hard work for you, and I'm going to say that Alexi Putellas was the best player on the team last year and deserves all the recognition. I do watch enough women's football here in the U.S. with the NWSL, whether it's the Women's World Cup international stuff, whether it was the Euros, I even tried to catch highlights about what's happening in the Women's Super League over in the U.K. just to see what the different level is, because, again, there's a little more parity there, obviously, than in Spain. And I've talked on this podcast before the issues with the Spanish League, why there are not financial resources in other teams, and why everybody else basically need to catch up to the feminine. That's the most important thing. But as I say, Alexi Putellas, you know, she was, I thought, the best player on the best team, you know, by not even a considerable margin. But it was funny this week, a bit more snubbing. Alexia wasn't in FIFA's new game, and I don't know how much I don't play much, but whether you play or not, and so she wasn't in FIFA's new game, the top 22 players. So her rating was not in the top 22. And that definitely raised my eyebrows on that one. You know, maybe we need to send an email to EA, because the reigning UEFA Women's Player of the Year, 43 matches last season, 26 goals, and only 27. So I do say, yes, she's a snub. She says she hadn't played in 15 years, so it's something to laugh about. But at 27, listening to her Juan Gamper trophy, what makes her speech, what makes her the right person for the captaincy?
What makes her the right person for the captaincy? I didn't think you were leading up to that question. Well,
I'm not going to give an easy one. Just say,
I think there'd be very few people that disagree with you that she was the best player last season. Like, she was just a standout. For the captaincy, I think her dedication to Barca carries a lot of weight. And she did an interview this past week with the Revista, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Or I can't remember. No, I had so many interviews and stuff. But she basically sort of said she wants to have the duration of her career at Barca. Like, she doesn't want to go anywhere else. She's not interested in going anywhere else. And I think that carries a lot of weight. She knows the team inside out. She's got great relationships with all the players. She sets up, I think, probably as many goals as she scores, if not more. You know, she's giving goals to other players, which I think is important in the position that she's in. to then take on a captaincy as well. Yeah, I mean, I kind of wondered how Irene Paredes would fit into that because she's the Spanish national captain. And you know, she's got this strong leadership role. And she does a lot of the work from the back. She does a lot of the distributing the ball. She pairs up amazingly with Mapi Leon, but we expected that from seeing her play in Spain as well. But, you know, she's got that strong leadership as well that she'd probably be able to be just as good a captain. Jenny Hermoso is another one that, you know, she leads from the front. I think it would have been difficult for me to have chosen a captain. And so why not pick a standout player like Alexia? But yeah, I think she just runs the show very much from midfield, especially in attack.
Well, I also think the challenges of a captain at Barcelona between what Sergio Busquets has to do as a captain, and that's basically be the face for when things are not going well, and to be a leader in that way, and basically take on all the public pressure and be that leading force that in that vacancy, having Messi gone, and then the history of that captaincy, the weight of whether it was Xavi, whether it was Iniesta or Puyol, of course, like there's all these different players just in the last 20 years. And again, what that weight of that does mean. And then the responsibility for the women's captain is something totally different, because the harsh reality is that women's football, especially that in Spain, is fighting for recognition, is fighting for the attention that it deserves. So what really impresses me about Alexia, and you say that she is, you know, Barcelona until she dies, is she was asked about that captaincy, and she immediately follows the line of captains who have been there while she's been on the team, from Ani Escribano to Laura Raffles to Marta Unze to Vicky Lozada. And she just kind of names them. She just kind of lists, like, hey, I got something from each of these to become the captain of Barcelona, even at 27, because I've been around the first team for now 10 years since we went from not being professionals to being full-blown professionals, and our salary is starting to match that. And to me, also, the way she's been it's about that coverage too, and she's been outspoken about things that, while has not made headlines, if she was the men's captain, or if she was captaining a treble-winning side in the men's, and she made some of the comments she's made that I'm about to read, that she would be getting, both good and bad, she would be getting a lot of press for these comments. So she was quite outspoken about the prison sentences relating to Catalan independence, which is, again, for a Catalan captain at FC Barcelona is always going to be something that's going to create discussion. You know, we don't go into the politics of it here, but it's something that always creates discussion. And then she also said about the jersey availability for the feminine players, about how, and she kind of went through even the marketing strategies of, hey, these jerseys need to be in those stores and those shops, and they have to be in those places so you can buy Aitana's. And I think Aitana was the one she mentioned. So you need to buy Jenny's jersey. You need to be able to buy Aitana's. That's how you make more fans of this sport. Then she talked about, you know, the digital, I mean, the broadcasting rights. She even spoke about that. And then something as simple as having fans know when and where to watch the feminine matches at least a week before. So she's not only she's thinking about how to be the best player on the field, how to be a captain of the feminine and do all this winning, but she also is considering taking on the responsibility of trying to be that voice for how to grow the sport, how to literally grow the popularity for her sport and the team that she lives for beyond FC Barcelona. And I think that's what makes her the perfect captain for FC Barcelona at this moment. And being 27, we hope that in the next 6-7 years, if she stays only 33, 34, and she'll still be captain, that, you know, her voice is going to be found in different places, right? It starts to make the headlines at ESPN FC because, whoa, did you hear what the feminine at Barcelona, the three-time treble-winning captain in Barcelona, you know, what she had to say today, right? And I hope that we get to that point where it does enter the international zeitgeist and does enter into the news in that way.
I couldn't agree with you more. And she's been very vocal. And I remember when they won the Champions League, actually, that she said, like, this is just great. It's great for women's football. It's great for women's football in Spain. She's, you know, she talked about, I'm pretty sure it was Alexia. When she was growing up, she was like, we didn't have heroes to look to. Or we did, but they were men's footballers. You know, they were. And she says, it's great now that we can set an example to these kids that can grow up watching us play football. And I think it's happening. And it's happening in the club as well, you know, like, The feminine shirts now, they sell them for women and for men. Like this season, I think, if I remember correctly, is the first season you could buy a Barca feminine shirt with the Stanley sponsorship in a men's fitting. Mm-hmm. And like little things like that, I think are really important because it shows that you've got this solidarity with the team. You see the team as important as the men's team. There's things like sharing training facilities. I think that was an important step. for the women's team to be seen as equals. And obviously there are various other issues that aren't in place for women's football, not necessarily at Barca, but across the world of women's football. And she is vocal about that, and she speaks out about that, and she calls things out for what they are. And like you say, if it were the men's team captain, it'd be making all kinds of waves and headlines. And I mean, maybe that's what she wants to do. Maybe she wants to make headlines because she believes in the fight that she's fighting.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a difficult fight. I think the easier fight is the one that they have on the field with just the dearth of talent that they have. So I got two more for you before I let you go, Jamie. One, I think, a little more difficult, one easier. Let's start with the easy one. So getting into the action after dominating Arsenal in the Champions League, I think some fans kind of did. They rolled their eyes a little bit about Barca's domination because as awful as it sounds, it seems like people are already kind of fed up with them crushing everybody they face, which, you know, here we go again. They will never get a tough game. And yet you were on the call for that Atletico Madrid match. And, you know, I was watching it in the first half. Yeah, it was close. It was tactically a close game, but it still ended 3-0. Caroline was almost perfect in that match. And Aswala kind of reminded us with the opening goal and her movement and everything else that she's also a star that kind of does kind of get lost in all the other amazing attractions that the Femini have. But I mean, do you think it's good that they very rarely do get a tough task? And do you think, you know, being on the call, did you feel like that game was ever in question?
So Saturday, I've had this horrible cold. And Saturday, I was so coldy. So I apologize now if I was like one play behind and all bunged up and nasally. But yeah, I think like we talk about this. We do talk about it. And I did the Arsenal match with Emma Byrne that unfortunately we couldn't broadcast it live, but we did, you know, a Barca TV Plus version that you could watch on catch up and on demand. And Emma Byrne is a former Arsenal player. And she came in, she says, Barca are going to steamroll them. She says, but I really hope Arsenal bring a fight because I really want to see Barca be tested. And up to that point, they hadn't lost a match by any, they hadn't won a match by any less than 5 goals. You know, I think I can't remember how they started the season. It was like 5-0, 5-0. And then
the Deportivo like Alaves
8-0, well, yeah, and then 9-1 against Alaves when they conceded the first goal of the season.
How dare Alaves!
And it was a lucky goal from a corner, and like from the angle I had, I didn't think that header was going in, and it kind of like almost like arced over the top of it was Catacoli in goal. But yeah, good. Like I want to see them get tested. I want to see them win, of course. But I think as a spectator, it's nice to see a bit of a show, a bit of a spectacle. It's as a Barca fan, it's nice to see your team smashing 8 goals past the opposition, but it is nice to see a bit more of a challenge. And I think in that first half, I think it was a bit more of a fight. I think Atletico surprised Barca quite a bit. I mean, they all the interviews before the match, they were like, yeah, we know Atletico surprises. You know, we've been there. They hadn't yet won at that ground, the new Centro Deportivo Wanda. And so Barca were out there for a fight as well. And their usual tactic of coming out the gate swinging, I think Atletico did really well to neutralize that and shut that down. And they put in some quite creative moves as well. And they pressed just as high as Barca did and made their life difficult. But as soon as that first goal went in, I was sort of like, here we go. And then in the second half, Lika came on and it was like, here we go. You know, now things are going to get interesting. And then it was great to see Jenny and Uwabi back on the pitch as well after they've been out for injury and missed the start of the season. So that was great to see them return. And yeah, I think a 3-0 defeat, like when you've been following Barca women, 8-0, 8-0, 9-1, whatever, to come away with a 3-0 win, it's sort of like, it's just a 3-0 win. But then you think about it, it's like, I know, 3-0 win is a great win, you know?
Yeah.
We're just so used to winning by so much.
Yeah, I mean, every part of me wants Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid to catch up a bit in, you know, in their quality. And a reminder, too, that Barcelona, even, what was it, 3 years ago when Atletico Madrid was winning the league, and it wasn't that long ago when Atletico Madrid was actually a little bit of the better side, and then all of a sudden Barcelona just zoomed past them in that race and wound up zooming past a bunch of other teams that you thought were going to be at that level, right? So now Barcelona immediately does, while they're going to have to do a lot more winning to get to the level of prestige that Lyon and Wolfsburg have, but yet on the field and talent-wise, they're very much right there.
like watching them play is it's something to marvel at because they move so in sync. And, you know, you see the triangle formation when they're with the ball, and if they're not with the ball, then they work in sort of pairs to close it down. And there's always that one third player sort of overlapping and like strategically. And I'm not a huge strategy guy. I like to watch good football or soccer, but it's like strategically watching them work their system and they know, like, they've got it so in their head what they need to do, and they work together so well, and that they're almost like finishing each other's sentences sometimes, you know, they're that in sync, and it's really wonderful to watch. But I agree with you. I think for the sake of women's football in Spain, I think they need a little bit more competition because that'll just lift everything up, you know?
Yeah. And I think the challenge then becomes very internal. I mean, obviously Luis Cortez, you win the treble and then there's a new manager coming in. No, he didn't really come in. It was more of a promotion, of course, for Guedes. And I mean, I think the challenge now for him, for the manager, he's a young manager as well. How do you find minutes for everybody? And so as much as you think that the feminine are all just kumbaya and hugging each other, and they are lifting each up, they're up, and they are very much in sync, but you know, they want to play too. There are egos there too. And while Vicky Losada and Carrie Hamraoui left, in come Paredes with no defenders other than, what was it, Codina, I think, was the one who went out on loan, the center back, the young center back. She goes on loan. She was the only one who left, so it's not like Paredes took her minutes. Paredes needed even more minutes than that. And then Engin comes in, who is kind of a similar in style to Losada, and then Rolfo joining the forward line. So I think the idea is that Engin is like for Losada. And then a defensive midfielder for Hamraoui didn't need to be replaced because Paredes is now the starting center back, and Patry, who can just stay in the midfield and doesn't have to play on the back line, where she was so good in the Champions League too. Incredible that a defensive midfielder just fills in there. But I think the real question that I'm asking about where does he find those minutes definitely comes on the front line there. As I said, like, everything kind of makes sense behind. I mean, and those like Andres Pereira, like, or Falcón, like, they will lose minutes, sure, with Pereira. But, you know, whether it's Claudia Pina, the 20-year-old striker who returned from loan, as I said, CGH, Mariona, who is, again, one of my favorite players. I mean, you'd have to, it'd be difficult for me to, if I had to choose between Alexi Putellas or Aitana or Mariona's jerseys, it'd be tough. I'd have to go with all three, but Mariona, and then Jenny, obviously, has returned from injury. Rolfo is new to the show. Bruna Villamala, who has 14 goals in 17 matches and is still just 19 years old. She needs minutes, obviously, for development. And then Aswala and Martins. And so that's 8 players for 3 spots. So I guess not that bad in terms of total number of players. But then 6 of them, and so again, no disrespect to the young players in Villamala and Claudia, but 6 of those players would be starting every match for almost any other team in the world. I mean, and I think that winds up being the, not only is it at the back that's been fortified by Paredes to basically get rid of the one issue that the Femini had last year, and that they could be a little shaky at the back against very talented opponents as they were in 2019, but now with Paredes.
And they're so solid now with Mappy so Leon and Paredes, like, they're just this dream combo in defense. Yeah. Like, there's nothing else like it.
But what do you do
with that
forward line? Because they're just so deep and everybody deserves to start. And it's so difficult for a player like Aswala, I think, to just, you know she's going to be a bench option when the matches matter the most. Yet, again, she'd be starting everywhere else, right? She'd be in that Ballon d'Or conversation if she was playing at so many other places.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's, for Jonah Geraldez, it must be difficult every time. Like, you look at your squad list and you've got like 22 amazing potentially starting players. And he's like, well, what do I do with this? And I remember last season, I remember him saying, like, he's almost spoiled for choice. He's, you know, it's a nice problem to have. But I think being in that team, perhaps you have to accept that you're not going to start every match and accept that there are other players that are just as deserving of starting as you are. And I mean, I remember one of the when Luis Cortez left. Thank you for reminding me his name. It's been a long week already. When he left, I remember there were, you know, various kind of people surmising why he's left and various theories. And I remember one of the ones that kept coming out again and again was kind of like the work ethic and that he wasn't rotating enough. And so maybe these players, they're quite happy with this idea that they're going to be more rotations and there are opportunities to rest as much as there are to come on and be, you know, be the star and then be in the spotlight for less time perhaps, but it means that when they are on the pitch they can have this work rate that's much higher. I don't know, that's kind of my own supposing, but isn't it great to have so many star players ready and willing to fight for the same objective? Like, I think that's a that's such a great thing. I mean, there's been criticism that Leaker should have been starting more this part of the season, but I think maybe as the season rolls on, that maybe she will start more. And
that's the argument though about especially Jenny and Leaker, because they are, I mean, throughout their careers, they've had a number of injuries that have always seemed to sideline them when they're at their best. And so if Lecky only has to play 22 matches a year, as opposed to 40 across international and domestic and Copa del Reina and Champions League, right? That being able to rotate and give players the proper rest that, you know, they kind of do deserve. I mean, other than Mariona, who basically, I mean, I don't know. She always seems to want to be out there on the field at all times. And she just plays a specific role that seems to be irreplaceable, you know, in a way.
Yeah, Mariona she gets hold of the ball and she just puts it wherever it needs to be for the rest of the team to score the goal and take the glory, you know, and she's very much a linchpin kind of.
Well, yeah, I don't like to compare the men and women's players, but I mean, she is a spitting image of what Pedro was to those all conquering sides. Exactly. Like for like, sure. I mean, with the whether it was coming from the academy, right, the Barcelona type player, that, I mean, all of it. So
I feel like I've not really fully answered your questions. I've done the politician thing of like of avoiding them. But
I think we got to where we needed to be. That like with Martins and Jenny, it's a good thing to be able to rotate. The truth is, if they want to be starters and they want to get the minutes elsewhere, then they will leave. And that's true, that if they want to be starting, I mean, and Kiara Hamraoui has said it herself, that she went back to PSG because she wants truly to be an important player in a team, as opposed to, she wound up having a great Champions League final Hamraoui did. But that said, I mean, she's looking ahead this year and Patry is 24 years old. That midfield three of Aitana and Alexia and Patry, if you come to Barcelona, the Femení team, you know that you're likely going to be the fourth option, even if you're the captain that Losada was last year, right? Even if you're the vice captain, you're still not going to break that midfield three, who are all in their mid-20s. They're all just entering their prime.
Absolutely. And I think those players don't want to be injured either. You know, they don't want to push themselves so that they're, I don't know, playing when we're in full flow and there's Champions League and whatever else, there's the potential for two matches a week, you know? And they don't want to have to push themselves to those limits where they're risking injury either. So I think each player will have their own priorities. And Amory decided that she wanted to go back to PSG and take that on that different kind of approach. But we've said it now a couple of times that all these players, how do you just choose between them? They're all so stand out. They've all got such a strong personality on the pitch and off the pitch, but the way they play their football. And so I think all of them, whether they're on the, you know, they're starting regularly or not, they have this opportunity to shine and they do so. And I think a lot of them would rather have that than risk potential injury and start every match.
Yeah, or not win trebles. I think that's the other option, and not win, right?
I mean, that's the other thing.
You could go somewhere else and maybe you don't win a treble.
Somewhere else and don't win a treble. Like, I don't know, if you can get to the end of the season without any injury and you say, well, I started half the matches, but we've got three, you know, and I came on as a sub in, I don't know, the other 30% of the rest, and then 20% I rested completely. But look, we've got these three cups that are the best and biggest in the world, and I was there and I was a part of that. I don't know, like, priorities. You got to choose your priorities, I guess.
Right. Well, Jamie, I'm really glad that you prioritize coming on the Barcelona podcast. I'm glad we finally got you. So other than your work for Barca TV Plus, I mean, you could even go into that, but what else do you have going on aside from that? I know you're doing some other stuff too.
Yeah, I'm a busy guy. No, come and check out Barca TV Plus because we're about to launch a new show on there by the end of the month, I think, possibly even as early as next week. Depending on how things go, but we're about to launch a new show that myself and Diego Lorena are a big part of, and it's quite exciting, it should be quite a lot of fun. So yeah, make sure you head over to Barca TV Plus, and if you're not there already, and you can watch, you know, a whole bunch of matches whether live or on demand, and we've got the live coverage and everything else. I'm going to plug my podcast. It's a fairly young podcast. I think we're up to about episode 6 now. We just published 5, 6. It's called 21 for 21. It's 21 lessons for sport media in the 21st century. So it's all about stuff that's going on in the world of sport. And, you know, we started off talking about, I don't know if you're following the PK and Ibai Llanos stuff. Mm-hmm. So Ibai Llanos is this sort of Twitch sensation in the Spanish speaking world.
I have to learn Twitch. That's what I know.
He's teamed up with Gerard Piqué, and they're bringing Ligue 1 matches. They're kind of doing following PSG. Ibai Llanos was the first guy to interview Messi once he signed at PSG. So we saw that there wasn't anyone really talking about this in the English-speaking world. So we're like, hey, we should do something about it. And my friend, there's the co-host, he's a sport marketer. So he's got kind of like a different insight to me about these things. And he's very data-driven as well. So I feel like we bring two different approaches. So we started with that. And then we did an episode about women's football, because the whole deal with DAZN and YouTube to bring every UEFA Champions League match for the next 2 years for free. And then beyond that, I think there's a percentage of matches they're bringing, which is huge. It's huge for that sport. And it's great to give the women's game more visibility in that way. And then we've talked about NFTs and fan tokens. So we talk about a bit of everything. Like I say, we're still fairly new to the podcasting game, but I'll give that a plug. So that's 21 for 21. It's on Spotify, Apple, Google, and YouTube, among other places.
Yeah. I tell people, whether you just follow Jamie on Twitter with the link in the show bio, and you can again follow him on that, listen to that show, because I think we gave a little bit of a teaser for that kind of stuff, that usually people come here for the first team content and us yelling about Koeman or everything like that. But yeah, today was a different conversation. So I'm interested to see what people think of this show that we just did. And again, some of the things that we talk about, where the way that, other than just on the pitch, the way that content is made and produced and given to you, and decisions that are made behind the scenes. And again, even just the people who know the players, like Jamie getting to know the players. So thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, you can follow him on Twitter. That's in the show notes. And then we're also at the Barcelona Pod on Twitter and Instagram, if you don't know already. Facebook, the Barcelona Podcast. That's a closed group, as well as Patreon is how we keep making these shows. We're also on YouTube. As I said, I plugged it, but I spent hours this weekend doing a deep dive on how every single one of those dream teen on the cover of Revista Barça have come to Barcelona, and not all of them are from Catalonia. So I think the number was 6 of 14 are not from Catalonia. So how did they get here? How did Barcelona scout them? And things like that. So that is what I got into over there. So check that out on YouTube in the coming days. But for now, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.